Hello and welcome to Board Stupid, the podcast that loves talking tabletop board games, D&D and other awesome stuff. I'm Wayne.
I'm Simon.
I'm Tom.
I'm Nick.
And I'm Karen.
There's lots of us today, that's why it sounds kind of roomy, and I don't have enough microphones and I don't want to buy any more.
Fair enough. We have three, I think we'll do.
That's fine. We're here with our good friends Nick and Karen to talk about the King's Dilemma, and we'll talk about that a little bit more and what that is very shortly. We're all nerds talking about the things we love that are worth geeking out over. So Simon, are you ready?
Aye.
Tom, are you ready?
Absolutely.
Nick, are you ready?
100%.
Karen, are you ready?
I abstain.
Boring.
I am ready to hate on the poor. We dive in to this week's episode. This week we played King's Dilemma. We played as a series where we talk about an epic board game that we played this week. And this week it's the vote casting, house building, council swaying, legacy story epic King's Dilemma. In this episode, we're going to be diving into the things we liked and breaking down the elements that make it great. Because at the end of the day, we only play awesome games, and King's Dilemma is all for the good of the realm.
Or,
at least it's good for me.
Definitely no self-serving in this.
Perhaps a little bit selfish.
A little bit selfish
in the direction of the good of the realm.
That's maybe.
How full is my coin purse, I wonder?
Poor suffer. Absolutely. Right, so just in advance, minor spoilers for anyone that hasn't played King's Dilemma and fancies it, we are going to be digging into a couple of possible story arcs.
Yeah, we want to do our best to enthuse and entertain you with this. And it's inevitable we're going to talk about stuff that will be revealed in your game, but there are branching storylines. You might well have a wildly different story or experience than we do.
Absolutely, and we're not going to go into massive detail. So it shouldn't spoil everything for you, but just beware. If you don't want to know anything, then turn off now. We'll go listen to the other 63 episodes of that we've got at the moment, so probably more than that at this point. Anywho, The King's Dilemma is an interactive narrative experience with legacy elements, featuring several branching storylines leading to many possible finales and an evolving deck of event cards at its core. Players will represent the various houses leading the government of the Kingdom of Ankhist. You have to keep the kingdom going while also seeking an advantage for your own house. This power struggle may lead the kingdom into war, probably famine, definitely, or riot, absolutely. Or it could generate wealth for some people, and well-being, maybe, depending on your choices.
Yeah. Apparently that can happen.
I haven't seen it.
This has been rumoured.
Well-being, what? The thing is, each decision will have consequences, and what's good for the kingdom as a whole might be bad for your family. King's Dilemma will play 4 to 5 players, which is interesting.
Very specific.
Yeah. Minimum player count of 4.
I hadn't realised it was a minimum of 4.
Yeah, 4 to 5 players.
I think having played it and can see that it wouldn't work very well, because of the mechanics of the game, wouldn't work terribly well with less players.
Absolutely. Designed by Hjalmar Hach and Lorenzo Silva. Hjalmar, I'm very sorry. I don't know how to say your name. The artist is Giorgio Baroni and Giulia Higini.
Yes, there was the atypical finger pose there from where.
Yeah, okay. It's published by Horrible Games, who actually did the Railroad Inc. series.
Yep.
Yes.
The exact same guys, isn't it, that made this?
I think it might be, as a matter of fact. Yeah, same crew.
There's a copy on the shelf right now. Yeah. Let's go and have a look.
We got Hjalmar Hjak and Lorenzo Silva.
Oh, there you go.
I think same designers.
Quite a difference.
Very different.
Wildly disparate.
It's nice. Yeah, it's fun when you see game designers lend their hands to completely different things.
I mean, you use a pen in both games, don't you?
Basically the same game. That's it, basically the same.
King's Dilemma the Roman, right?
Absolutely.
Someone wants that out there.
And also they've recently done, is it The Great Split? That's Horrible
Games. Great Split, it's Horrible Games. Yeah, exactly. And they're doing The Queen's Dilemma.
That's right.
Are they now games where they were Guild? Or did it change the other
Oh, yes, they did.
It did change. Guild,
yeah.
Now it's Horrible Games.
It was Guild, now Games, for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Look for the shield with the tentacle.
Yeah. The Eldritch
Eldritch Tentacle Shield.
The playtime is estimated at 45 to 60 minutes per game.
It varied. I think we had a couple of very short games and we had some longer ones.
Yeah, probably averages around that. Yeah. An hour
ago. I suppose that's about right, yeah.
We managed to get in...
Two a night.
Quite comfortably.
Yeah.
Did we ever do three a night? I think we might have with once or twice when it went really short.
I'm sure there was a game that ended really quickly.
Yeah, once or twice, I think. That sounds 20 right. minutes, like, just started and ended pretty quick. For story or other reasons. The MSRP is £60, but you can get it for about £49. There or thereabouts. Value-wise, all right?
Oh, yeah, no. This was my game that I purchased. So many years ago. It was one that I bought to play with my previous friend group.
They're dead now.
They're all dead.
Well, less dead and more just we've all moved away from place. And obviously then Saucy joined him with you guys, met Tom and Wayne at the Crawley Game Club, and then obviously since then I've met Simon and Kerin. Sit and White, and then obviously you started me out with the Jaws of Lion.
Campaign-esque.
Yeah, slightly. And then obviously as soon as that hit, I was like, oh good, I've found a group of people that we can consistently play games with, and yeah, snapping this on, and I, forgetting the fact that I obviously bought it, obviously after owning it for 2 years and not playing it, the value had obviously disappeared at that point.
But yeah.
We got a good, what, like
three months of play?
I think it was
once a week?
Yeah, it was about 17 or 18 games, right? But we played mostly two games a night.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah.
And we made it most weeks, didn't we? There was the occasional week someone was away.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And we decided we would only ever play with the full group.
Yeah,
the
full group. Yeah. Exactly. So, let's dig in as we normally do and start with the components and our design. And we'll start with the game board, which is kind of a long rectangular thingy.
Yeah.
Sort of a double fold.
To be honest, the board is very bland.
Yeah. It's super bland. Yeah.
It's a lot of brown.
Throughout the game, really.
Which... Yeah. I mean, fine. I suppose it looks quite refined in its design. It's kind of this gold-esque without actually being gold.
It's very generous of you.
And a leathery brown looking. It's supposed to look like a folio from ye olde time.
The board is essentially just a glorified set of resource tracks. And there's only
five
resource tracks plus the stability track. And then sort of it has spaces for you to lay out cards either side of the board, right? They don't even go on the board.
Absolutely. We have a double-sided map.
Yeah, that's fine. Saying to Kerin earlier, one half of it where it's like you get a zoomed in where you get all the names of the locations, so you can, if you really want to, reference everything when a card pops up.
So there's a map of Ankhist, which talks about or shows all of the families and the locations. And then there's a map of the wider kingdoms.
Didn't really do anything.
Talks about, it gives us some references to things that happen around the main story.
Yeah.
But I don't think we necessarily ever really reference.
I don't even remember, it says the continent was Lewick. I don't ever actually remember that appearing.
No.
Early on, we ventured down into the...
Yes, we went I remember
to
the that.
And we wanted to know where it was. Apart from that...
No.
I think it's a nice thing to have.
Yes,
I mean, it is a story-based game, so knowing what and where you're looking at, I think it's a very nice thing to have. But it kind of, in my head, works a bit like the Forgotten Realms map.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
It's a reference. You look at it and that's it.
You look at the start and go, okay, it doesn't really matter beyond here.
No, it's a reference point. It had no mechanical implications in the game. It wouldn't matter if one thing happened in a certain location... That would be entirely independent of any.
I was kind of expecting to put stickers on it or something at some point. That never happened. Mm. But we didn't even use this. Kerin made us an amazing hand-painted watercolour map. And was it watercolour?
It was.
It was gorgeous. Yeah.
So ink and watercolour.
Yeah. It was lovely. Beautiful. So you'll see that on our Insta page, which you'll find a few posts down. We also have player house shields. So you've got like a little Heidi shield that you will use.
How many factions were there?
I want to say we used
half of them.
Yeah, I think there was 12.
12?
Because,
and we used 5.
Yeah, there was each, there were 12.
There were sort of diametrically opposed houses for each of the sort of 5 different favours, right?
Yeah, because we found out that some had strictly opposing goals on them.
Yes.
And most, I think 4 of us had Well, three of us had ones that were like referenced quite uniquely, and then two people had. I think it was you guys, wasn't it,
Tom,
Simon?
Tom and I were. Oh, yes. Yeah,
we were specifically opposed.
Loggerheads based on our drafted house, which made for interesting gameplay. But boy, could it get frustrating!
It's sort of like a mini role playing. It sort of encourages you in flavour to play your house in a certain way, but it also has your specific house goals on it, which have mechanical implications.
You'll get more reward if you manage to exert this particular discipline on a game or
absolutely
not.
So there's 12 of these player shields. Each will give you a bunch of information on the back about what your house is typically like and what sort of things they're into and not into and how you should kind of play the game.
I was the conservative party.
Basically the current Tory party of the game.
They were quite crucially used to carry over your ongoing gamer status.
Score tracking and ongoing achievements. And
I quite like the artwork on the back of these as well.
Yeah, that was neat. Yeah, it's the one bit of colour this game has.
Quite distinct, different house emblems, ranging anywhere from a crowing cockerel to a skeleton hand holding a rose.
I was the tower riding on the back of a turtle.
Yep.
Tortoise?
Tortoise, I'd say. No evidence of them being aquatic.
A very loud chicken.
Yeah, apparently. Very loud chicken. We had a whole ton of cards. So you have the voting cards, you've got agenda cards, you've got the event deck, which is like story cards.
The event deck is like the core of the whole game.
The dilemma deck, or dilemma cards, right? Mm. And the cards are fine. They're interesting as well. They're all double-sided, or mostly double-sided. Where you'll have a full colour print of some artwork on one side, which is like generic fantasy realm stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Then on the back, you'll have a couple of paragraphs of text.
Yeah, so most of the cards are billed as dilemma cards, right? So you have full height art for the card.
Yeah.
Plus text, which explains the dilemma. Then it has a hint as to what a win or lose or an I or a nay result would give you. And then the other side of the card will be two resolutions, depending on whether you go with an I or an A, with more flavour text and then some sort of mechanical result.
And about half of these, I'll say most of these cards come in little envelopes.
I think the vast majority of the cards are...
Yeah, you get...
Legacy style, yeah. The vast majority of the cards are sealed up in a million little envelopes.
Yeah.
I think you start with one card and that card says, open an envelope, and then that gives you...
Yeah. You just keep getting more, right? There's a ton of envelopes in there.
I think you start with 0-0, and it's like, open 0-0, and then open 0-0 give you some stuff, and then that's seeded the dilemma deck, which is the draw one.
Well, there we go.
Yeah.
You then also get a massive sticker book.
Stickers!
Good stickers and bad stickers.
Exactly. Everyone likes a good sticker.
Yeah, it was almost about an inch thick, I think. So it's gives you an idea. It's like well over 200, I think, stickers.
177, I think.
There we go.
And the stickers represented ongoing effects that lasted between games.
This was the kingdom remembering what you specifically had voted towards, generally leading or lose. Generally, it was always leading. If you won a vote and it's like, we voted to, for example, burn down the poorhouse, you most likely would have it that, here's a bad sticker saying you burnt down the poorhouse and you get ongoing effects. Then you're just changing the starting power and coins you had. Starting power only. So yeah, generally, the more bad things you remembered for, the less power you had at the start of each game, and that fluctuated. And it was always usually... No, actually not opposite. I'd say it was never 100% clear what it was going to be, because it was obviously, you get the good, bad... It told you it was going to be good, bad.
But you don't know exactly what it is.
No, exactly. No. Yeah. And most of it was obviously... It's just flavour, a bit more words to read.
It's worth noting that there's a lot of reading in the game.
There is so... Right? I'm looking at... There's a lot of text. I've splayed out some of the stuff in front of us, and it's hit me. There are so many words in this game.
Yeah, you gotta kind of want to read.
I would like to point out that in this game, I enjoyed the text. There's a lot of games where I'm kind of like, I'm not listening to the person reading.
Yeah, skip, where's the mechanic?
It
is a story game at its heart, and you go into it expecting that, right?
I think it's so bite-sized. I think it's all, because it's all presented on a card, it's never it's, apart from when you get like special events which have a full block of text, it's never like too much to read through, and because usually the leader, the person who reads it, changes every time.
Mm-hmm.
you, everyone gets a chance to read it. It's always something interesting as well. So yeah, kudos to those guys writing this, because my God, is it a lot of... They must have had so much editing on this.
And we had a tried to work this out earlier. What sort of percentage of the cards do we think we never even opened?
Two-fifths.
Yeah.
Two-fifths.
45 open, 30 closed.
Oh, there you go. That's it. So hopefully that means that having gone all the way through the game, you can see that there is... lots of room for different branching paths that we never even saw.
Absolutely.
Am I right in saying that it wasn't natively English?
It'd be Italian, yeah.
It was Italian, yeah. Right.
No, I think it was. I think this was an English release game.
Was it?
Okay. Yes. Italian company with Italian designers, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it came out... I think it was... At least it was an English release at the start. So if they did it both Italian and English at the same time, but the English release definitely was, like... from the get-go. I do not believe it was Italian first and then translated.
But in any case, though, it's Italian designers writing this, which is impressive anyway. Phenomenal stuff. The stickers don't really go anywhere except on the main board.
Yeah.
And there's like sort of four rows of that stuff.
It's a permanent reminder, which at the start of each preceding game either terrifies you or elates you, depending on whether you got a good or bad result.
You see
your signature that you filled it in with.
You then have a ton of tokens in this game, which will be used to track stuff such as the amount of money that everyone has.
They're quite boring.
Yeah. The amount of power that you've got. You've got a gavel, or Wayne's gavel. You've got the open agenda tokens.
Why was it Wayne's gavel?
I was always like lowest on the number of...
You always had the least. You always had the least prestige.
Most amount of crave, yes. So I could be winning.
That's true.
You had the least good points.
Least
good
prestige, point. Not yes. Most crave.
Most. I had most crave. I also did have the least prestige. So there is that. So that's all of the stuff in the game. Any notes on the art design or anything you want to mention?
Decidedly muted palette, which I don't dislike, but also...
I think the idea is
better.
Yeah, I think the idea is to bring the focus to what's written on the cards, right?
Yeah.
There's not a lot of flashy tokens. The board's kind of boring. The map is not necessary.
Mm.
Everything is the cards, and the game is about the card engine.
Yeah, it's about the interaction. Right. It's about you guys yelling at each other mostly. Like
it's a role playing game.
There was most of the time, I don't think there were a couple of cards where we eventually figured out that. The dilemma was presented visually on the card, where there's like a little invention sheet, those were the only ones I remember us going, here, show that around. Whereas the rest of them, I don't think I actually ever bothered to like go, oh, look, it's that, and show people.
Yeah, not really.
You could kind of catch that some were like every time you opened a packet, they had usually the same card back. So I guess you could just tell, like, oh, we're hitting this story beat.
Yeah, you'd get a set of four or five cards related to the same sort of sub-event that would all have the same art, or flavours of the same art.
Yeah.
In terms of that artwork, I really like it.
Yeah.
It is that classic oil painting medieval / Persian. It's kind of like Crusade almost.
Yes.
Yeah, Crusade level. Yeah.
It's evocative enough.
Yeah. Unlike other games, when I've opened them up and I've been like, oh, these components are gorgeous. I didn't get that feel with it, but throughout the campaign, I learned to love and respect some of these components.
Yeah. Mm.
They had so much impact, just the component itself.
Yeah.
And not from a visual standpoint, but from the power that it had.
Yeah. I think, it's a buy-in. You kind of, after playing it a few times and you get invested in what's going on, that a certain thing takes on a new appreciation to it.
You look past the component or constituent parts and just enjoy the game.
You know what, the coin is what, two concentric circles?
Yeah,
that's it. But then obviously when you start offering the coins to people, it's like, man, that's a coin. Like I've seen like with
coin.
On like a random note, like with the new Kickstarter for the new edition of this game, like you can spend like an extra 50 or 40 quid to get deluxe components for it.
Queen's Dilemma, you mean?
Yeah, for the Queen, sorry, the Queen's Dilemma. You can buy a deluxe component kit, where I think looking at it, there's more components like token components.
Okay.
But like I could have seen this game coming out with like metal coins and metal power things, but like
the issue is it'll play this once.
No, yeah.
So I can kind of understand a low production value for a game that you're going to play once.
Exactly. I don't mind limited budget components.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
A point on the coins, when you were to convince someone, you never said, I will give you a coin. Without showing them.
Oh, yeah.
You had a coin in hand. Always. And if you were going to up the ante, you would show them the extra coins. It was definitely a visual thing.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. Right, with that then said, how would you all rate the production value of the game? Tom, should we start with you?
I'm going to put this sort of somewhere in the middle, right? If we think about art, then yes, there's a lot of muted palette. It's got a lot of variety of art, but it's not what the game is about.
Yeah.
Production value, however, if I say production value is also all of the writing and the quality of the writing, then this is fantastic.
Yeah.
I've got to average out somewhere in between, so I'd probably say a 4. It's definitely eking up because of the quality of all the writing.
Okay.
I had a great time with the story, and that was production.
Okay. Karen.
So the quality of the product perfectly fits its use, I think. It doesn't need to be anymore. And as previously stated, you're going to play through the campaign once, you won't play it again. So you don't necessarily need metal coins for this. If you had metal coins for this, I'd import them into another game afterwards.
Yeah.
Bang on for what they needed to be. I love the artwork. The cards, because they don't really get shuffled that much, they don't need to be anything other than what they are. I think all of the components are still in good condition after all of our plays.
All the
coins and so on are punch board, and they are
fine.
There's no ripped edges or
I can curling. Point out one component that I noticed playing it that has taken damage, which is the momentum markers, because they are crescents with an arrow sticking out of them, and those sharp corners on about 3 or 4 of them are peeling, and that's the only complaint I'd have for this game is those tiny little cardboard punch out components started to fray.
They probably got handled more than anything else.
Yeah, the other ones you scratch across the table, move back and forth, and obviously then just going into a bag of other things. But yeah,
What rating would you give it, Karen?
Middling. 3 to 4.
Okay.
Same. They're saying the same thing. It's done. It's great. The writing's great. The artwork is good, decent. The colour, as Simon was saying, the colour palette is muted, but I think it kind of plays to help it, where this is kind of a bit... It was very much a downward, a very grim setting, mostly because we made it that way. So I think the mutedness helps towards it. Yeah, it's... I found like I wasn't really looking that much at this game, so yeah, 3, 3.5, 4. It does what it needs to. It's not excessive, it's not expensive, it's affordable for the amount of cards and words you get.
Fair enough. I think for pure production in terms of components versus cost, I'd give it a 2. It's all cardboard and they're all thin and etc. But as you say, if we're thinking about writing and entertainment and how well that's done, it's right up there. So yeah, probably averaging out at about a 3. But yeah, Simon?
I think you guys have covered it. The pieces in and of themselves, together to perform the function that they do, which is incredibly clever.
I think it
definitely brings itself up to a 3 or maybe a 4.
Let's talk about the core mechanics of the game. So how do you win a game of King's Dilemma? And I'm going to ask Nick.
Not the
entirety of the game, because to be clear, this is played over what, 15 games?
We had about 17 or 18 games, something like that.
You can see how many kings we've
grabbed.
How many did we
hold on?
Here we go. Paper rustling noise.
Near enough the back page, and so I think it's 2 pages of kings.
We had 16 games.
And I think the last one, that's not even a game, that was just writing down the final victor.
15 games.
Yeah, 15 games, okay. And you could play anything from sort of 14 to 18 or so.
We figured out there was a hard limit to how many number of games you could. There was a hard limit at both ways, and we were slap bang in the middle, I think.
We were on the light end slightly.
So how do you win one game of King's Dilemma, Nick?
You win one game by King's Dilemma by gaining victory points, I think they were called. Essentially, you'll be given a secret agenda card at the start of each game, drafting it from the player who previously had the most points least points last round, going up. Essentially, this dictates where you want the resource markers.
Short-term objectives.
Yeah. Essentially, where do you want the resource markers to end during this game? That'll be the voting of... You vote to have military increase because I won loads of symbols at the top half. You could hold on to coins, which each of the secret agendas gave you points depending on who had the most, second and third. And then there were little bits of points added every now and there with the amount of power you had. And your open agendas as well, which were dealt out based on the stickers, the Chronicle stickers that were put out during the game. Essentially, you had 4 and then 4... written in the scorebook points, and then a couple of others that could be gained throughout the game.
There'd be a few event-driven things.
And essentially, once the king either
Cocks
you,
it.
Yeah, the king kicks the bucket because you took too long making decisions where they all added up and king just dies eventually. Or if the stability marker gets too high or too low, leading to him being...
kicked out.
Yeah, either a rebellion happened or the rich people...
He was too successful and ousted by the rich.
At the end, once the once either king dies or stability gets too high or low, you add up all together the scores and then, yeah, that's it. Highest place essentially wins and gets to name the next king.
So you're working on a couple of threads of achievement, really. So we've got these five resources on the main board. So you've got your military might, your... general welfare, your general morale of the populace,
your overall
treasury, and then the knowledge, the seeking of
science,
unfound understanding. And yeah, each person at the beginning gets a different combination of those that they want to either push to greater benefit or to actually somehow, we said earlier, Tom was actively working against what I was aiming for. He purposefully wanted low welfare.
I basically always wanted low knowledge and low welfare for the kingdom. I wanted to selfishly contain all of the knowledge and welfare for the rich.
And if you did that particularly well, you might have won that particular game.
I would have got lasting achievements and points for that over the course of the campaign.
So yeah, kind of multi-threaded, but everyone was working around the same basic goals of we want these assets to do well or otherwise.
It was nice. Yeah. It basically meant every game was different because you always had a short-term goal that didn't necessarily play in line with your overarching family goals.
Yeah.
So you had variety between games, in addition to all the story variety.
Absolutely. So you're going to be manipulating these five tracks on the board. And you're essentially going to be doing that through these dilemmas.
Yep.
And this is the sort of core of the game, as in the name. You have a dilemma deck, and this is really interesting and where the fun begins.
There's no player turns as such. It's just a series of dilemmas.
It's just who starts the voting.
Yeah.
Exactly. And how that works is pretty straightforward. You just take a card from the bottom of the deck, you read the front of it, and it'll give you a moral dilemma of some sort. Pretty simple, right?
Yeah.
Sure, it starts that way. I think one of the early ones was something like, the populace are complaining of being hungry. Someone has offered a new source of food. Do you go with it?
This grey flour.
Would you like this cheap flour to make bread?
Would you like genetically modified crops?
You know, just enough to make you wonder whether it's an obvious decision or not. And that's where the gameplay then comes in, like, for my own benefit, based on the card I've drawn and my house desires, I very much want to investigate this. But I think we might all die if we do.
We won't, but the poor people will.
So you get limited amounts of information on the card, right? You get some flavour and some context given on the card.
It's like a couple of lines.
And it might be a few lines or a paragraph of text. And then it will give you an aye or a nay result, right? And the results will give an indication of which resource tracks are most likely to be impacted, either positively or negatively. Yeah. But that is by no means the extent of what most of these events do.
Precisely that. You might have something that will increase military, and it'll sort of say that in a little symbol, but when you flip it over, it'll do that, and it'll do something else. And it'll
screw
do something
your welfare
else.
Over.
Yeah.
You have no idea, and you're always trying to read between the lines, and we probably spent, I imagine, the majority of our playtime just debating over what the cards mean.
Oh, yeah.
What does it mean?
Why you, Tom, Wayne, were so insistent on the populace being so undeserving of everything.
which could have been because we thought a card was going to resolve a certain way, or because we were playing Bastard Houses.
It's most likely that.
The fun part, I think, here now is how we achieve that decision. It isn't just, let's reach a consensus. No, we're going to use power that we have, influence that we have already, and we vote on this. So every player has an aye and a nay, or a pass. We kind of leave it to the others to decide.
Yeah. Possibly
to your regret, as I found a couple of times, but I thought, well, there's a shoo-in. No one's going to vote against this.
You've got to skip some and hope for the best.
Inevitably fight. And you are very limited on the amount of power you start with, the amount of coins for influence that you start with.
Yeah, you can't vote on everything because you'll run out of influence tokens.
Well, I mean, ultimately,
tokens.
You have two resources, right? Power, which is voting, and money, which is...
Bribery for voting. Yeah, that's basically it. Bribery for more voting.
So you might think, oh yeah, I agree with this statement. I think we should vote. I'm going to vote with one of my starting power.
You keep your power hidden.
You do?
Behind. Yes. And when you place a vote, you take some of that power and you put it on the card in which you want to vote for. I, nay, or pass. If you do pass, whoever passes on that particular dilemma will take the power from the previous dilemma and split it among anyone who passed. Everyone whose vote goes through, their power then goes into the pot to be divided next turn.
All of the winners, right?
And everyone who lost the vote takes back their power.
Takes their power back.
So it's hard to keep track of how much power everyone has because it's constantly...
It flows quite a lot as a currency between all of the players.
So you might want to spend some power that you don't really expect to go through just because you mean everyone else that wants it to go through is spending more.
Or to drive up the votes on the other side. Even if you think you might lose, you might want to drive up how much power they have to invest in order to get that passed.
Desperately want it to go through, so you spend all the power you have in the hope that your side will win. You might team up and make an alliance with someone.
You might be stuck in a two-way shouting match, arguing over trying to convince the king who is the most real.
Yeah, there is that. Or you may, as I found quite hilarious at least twice, you might find yourself fighting someone who is agreeing with you.
Yes,
just to get the benefit.
Whoever puts in the most power on a vote, even if it's in agreement with someone else, will get the controlling start of the next round and any benefit that might come along with resolving the card.
They get to read the card and they potentially get the stickers. Yeah.
In addition, an important point for strategy is the voting ends when it gets back to that leader token.
It was a very interesting vote. It's a very interesting mechanic. When you look into it, it's just like, oh, you vote yay or nay of power. You think, oh, is it just a blind dump? But the fact that you can keep going, and if you increase it, you change who the leader is to the current, to the most, whoever increased it the most. So you can keep changing that goalpost round, assuming people can pump more power into it.
A bit like poker, I suppose. If someone has raised beyond where you started, you get another go.
So I found quite a few of the votes, maybe that's just maybe because of the group that we are, but I found a lot of times you got an almost like a... It was very gamey when the voting happened because you could sort of point across the table and go, no, you put in two rather than three because it forces player three to put in one and then that forces that player and you could kind of like, assuming you knew how much power and how people were going to vote, you could kind of almost like game out and like out loud say, no, do that.
Yeah. There were definitely times where you could mechanically outvote the other side and guarantee they wouldn't get a chance to vote again.
I'm going to put this out there. That's on you two more than it is. Some of the other people are the same. Not my kind of approach to the game, but yes, I do agree. That's definitely an option where you can work out that you can stop it getting back to someone that would then be able to increase it for them.
I think it's entirely valid. It is a closed economy, and that's the best way to think about it, where power is a currency that is spent, and you can drive up the cost of the commodity, in this case being the I vote or the nay vote, and force everyone to put more of their currency in. It's fascinating, actually, and it's a really weird sort of ebb and flow. Because you can't spend it all, you need to pass on a few. Mm. And if you pass on a few, you'll build up your power and then you'll become much more influential in the dilemmas to come.
Yeah, it's interesting. You might have a couple of events that you want to go all in on and then you find that actually you're then out for the subsequent next three events.
Yeah, completely.
And then you miss something that you really wanted to be involved in.
Absolutely. I never felt out of the game. When I passed or when I was out of power, I was still very invested in the vote.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So many times I would pass, but really wanted to go one way or the other.
Yeah.
And I then could only use my influence of, I'll give you some money if you vote this way. Even though I passed.
You still bribe people if you've got no power. Yeah.
That's one of those things, like you draw that card, you read out what's happening. It's like, oh man, this is a really big, important part of the kingdom that we all need to like focus on. I really think we should all say I. And I'm going to pass and let you guys fight it out. And it's just like, oh, great, cool. You're just soaking up what little power remnants made. But you always had the thing where you had that one round where, like, two or three people, maybe even four, dumped in all that power. And then it's sitting there, like that, like that stack of like 10 or like, I think we're like in the teens at one point. You're sitting there going, well, we could vote on the next one, or I could have some of the power. And if one person goes, well, I want the power, you're like, well, the next person says, well, I don't want them to have all the power, so I've got to pass. So at some point, coming the point of then the abstaining from the votes is almost then part of the game as well, because you don't want the player to get all that power by themselves.
Yeah, passing I thought was really hilarious, because typically when me and Tom were passing, it was, we'd make some sort of intimations to what our particular lord was doing at the time. Oh, yeah, I'm just in my tower.
The frequency.
I retire to my chambers.
Yeah, I retire to my chambers. Boring. I got interested in this.
Oh, and the fact that Kerrion wonderfully brought along silver goblets and wine to each session, albeit low or no, zero alcohol, but still, it gave the. It very much gave an air of legitimacy to
grandiose decision making.
It helped the role-playing. Helped us engage with the story.
Like, My favourite thing was like reading a dilemma out and being like, we can all agree this is really, really important. I'm going to my chambers.
I think there's a lot to say for that, Kerrion, because you bringing in that, like, just literally, alcohol-free wine, a bunch of like pewtery, metal-y goblets that looked very like, all had the ornate little engravings to it. I honestly think that probably did something to help elevate the game, because as you were saying, there were the times where you'd be like, oh, what a big important vote, pour me some wine, I pass, and then just you reaching across having a little sippy of, having a little sippy of the slightly sour grape juice. And I think that's something to say to it. You can, I've seen people online when I was obviously having this game for 2 years and sitting there looking at the components and looking at people online about spoiling it, seeing a lot of people make it an event to play, where some people are saying, oh, we dressed up, we wore our colours, we had charcuterie.
Cool. You could do that. We stopped short of that, but
we did.
It definitely could really lean into the role playing side of it.
It definitely brought looks from the other people in the gaming club when they see us cracking out our little goblets of wine going.
We were raucous.
Lots of bluster.
Absolutely. Alrighty. We talked about resolving the votes a little bit, right? So once everyone's voted, you're going to check who's put the most on the ayes or nays. And then the person that won the vote, i.e. put the most amount of power into the winning decision, gets to read out the resulting calamity.
And
get some sort of benefit.
I do wonder if most of the cards that we missed were the good things. It felt like there was a lot of bad stuff.
We weren't a happy society.
It was just funny.
But then it is the King's Dilemma. It's not the King's Day at the Beach.
King's Happy Day Out, exactly. Once that's done, as you say, we've got secret agendas. You're going to check to see who got those. And you're going to score points. And then the winner's going to name the next king. That's pretty much the flow of the game for the mechanisms, right? Is there anything you guys want to speak about in terms of specifics for the mechanics?
Well, you kind of develop this... I mean, to call it a choose-your-own-adventure, it kind of lightens it a little. But for each result, as well as, you know, your wealth goes up, your military might goes down, and someone gets to put a sticker down, you're also unlocking the next pack, the next part of the storyline.
Yeah, because some decisions will open more cards.
Yeah, some will just be, this happens... And you continue.
There were certainly decisions that we made, not necessarily because we thought they were necessarily the best short-term goal, but because we felt that they would advance the story.
So, you know, you're looking, without really giving any specifics, luckily my memory's rubbish, and it was a while since we finished playing this, but something like, a new invention is proposed. Yeah. Do you, as a kingdom, look into researching this, or do you let it go? Whichever of those you pick sends you down a very specific path for the rest of the campaign. Not just that game, but something you didn't unlock remains unlocked. So you just don't know. It's in these sealed envelopes in front of you.
How many
open them
sealed envelopes have we got in there?
We've got 30 that we never looked at.
30 that we never, ever saw.
Yeah. And there's probably four or five cards in it. I think it was always... four or five cards in each.
There was a few.
Most of them were four.
Some entered the main kind of game event deck. Others were a single use. This thing happens and they're gone.
It was something to read, two or three to slide in, and then occasionally extra ones. And then you had occasionally the event where it had more cards because it had a bit more rules to sort of read and figure out how to play them.
But you're evolving this storyline, and because it's not randomised, but... Well, I suppose it is slightly randomised because you're shuffling this ongoing deck, so you might... Whichever card you draw next will be one of, I think, five or six different storylines.
Yes.
So sometimes you're running through a story quite quickly, which is fine. You get, oh, what's next? And then other times you'll be like, oh, and the ships come back from far off wherever where you send you, like, oh, we did that four games ago.
Yeah, we funded this random expedition.
I wonder what they found, and then suddenly they found this amazing new thing, or a, you know, like the Book of the Dead. You're like, oh yes. Oh dear.
That's bad.
This is not a good idea.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Some things will come back to bite you in the arse several games later.
And I thought that was great to not have an immediate impact, but you know that something is going to happen.
Yeah.
An unknown point down the line was one of my highlights of this game.
Absolutely. Yeah, really good. All right, so with all of the mechanisms discussed, because that's pretty much the bulk of it, it's essentially a voting game. Yeah. How would you rate the complexity?
There was one more question I had on the list.
How
does the overall campaign...
Oh, do you want to cover... Yeah, let's cover that now then, as opposed to at the end. So we talked about the general flow of the game. That's the game-to-game, what you're going to be doing for 14 out of the 15 or 16 out of the 17 games that you play. And then you come to the last game.
Mm. So over the course of the 14 or 15, 16 games, however many it is, you are in winning positions at the end of each game, right? And depending on how well or badly you do in that game, and how that game ended, whether the stability of the kingdom sort of fell into chaos or whatever, and you were the biggest contributor or not, or the kingdom was very profitable and you were the biggest contributor or not, you would get either prestige or crave.
Yay,
which
great.
Generally represented sort of like good victory points and bad victory points, right? Those two tracks ostensibly looked like the way that the game was going to be ending.
Yeah, it felt, because I think based on what the rule book we inferred, even for the game, it very much felt like, prestige had very much victory points, but it felt like at some point the game was just going to flop and you were going to win
something
with prestige or you were going to win with crave.
Yeah, and then, so essentially there were six main storylines.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
There's loads and loads and loads of side events. Yeah. But
jousts.
Lots of, wonderful jousting.
More jousts.
Yes. Yeah. But the game had a series of main branching storylines, six main storylines, that once they were completed over a series of sort of interconnected events, you would either have sort of like a positive ending to that storyline or a negative ending to that storyline. Right? There were some points that came off those ending cards, good or bad, which meant nothing to us until we got to the very end of the game.
Here's your cohesion and here's your disillusion or whatever. Yeah. It was here's your good points, here's your bad points. Kind of hard to see on the card exactly what it was, but we were counting as the game was going. And I think we were strongly leaning
one way.
Yes.
Despite our best efforts, we were strongly leaning.
I'm assuming that because each storyline ended in either good points and bad points, but there were different amounts of good points and bad points. So I don't know, but my thought might be that because there's only obviously binary good or bad ending, but whether or not there is a different weighting for that. So maybe we missed an ending which added more good points than the good points we got. But generally, the six storylines you followed through, and then once each storyline was done with, like placing the final card on the board, you then had an extra card which added this mystery sticker to the back of the book.
Mm. And there was sort of like an unfolding weird...
overarching
storyline, right, from these mysteries.
Obviously, at this point, now this is like sort of spoilers to what actually the game is going to give to you.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like the mystery stickers after you finished off each event give you the background to the world you were in for the mysteries that were happening.
Yeah, it's like this is what happened in the distant past to another kingdom that fell apart for some reason.
Because the game obviously was sneaking and say, like, hey, there's this fallen kingdom, there's this fallen kingdom, there's this fallen kingdom.
Foreshadowing, right?
Yes, yeah.
That's foreshadowing.
All right, so should we go into the heavy spoiler territory, at least for the last game of this particular...
Yeah, I think we have to.
So the
switch off now if you don't want to hear it.
Yeah, because well, at least for the next...
Skip couple, ahead.
Yeah, 5 minutes.
Right. Skip ahead.
I'll put timestamps in the recording so you can check. So starting now, we're going to dig into the last game of the campaign.
So we get to the final the final game of the campaign.
I was feeling confident.
Can I do a preface to that?
Yeah, go.
So... going into this game, obviously, I did reading into online, trying to avoid all spoilers. One of the things that I saw popping up with people looking at like spoiler-free reviews that people still mentioned were a lot of people were saying the ending of this game is where we all fell off and we found it was really bad. And I was like, shit. Because I want to play this big long game. If it's going to go off, if this is going to end with a big, like, just fart, big wet fart, it was like, oh man, that'd be such a,
it'd be a big downer.
That'd be such a bad end to it. So I was coming into it going, I really hope, and still with not knowing what was going to happen, going, I really hope this doesn't just resolve and go, oh, you had the most points, you win. I was really hoping that it wasn't going to be bad. I had no idea what was actually going to happen. And then we actually get to the last game and,
yeah,
oh boy.
So I really like this because I can see people not liking it for various reasons. If they have a commanding lead, for example, right? And we certainly had some fairly marked differences in overall score, right?
Yes.
Wayne had a vast amount of Crave.
Lots of Crave. Yeah, right? Quite amusingly, for the first three games, I think, we were all collecting prestige to varying degrees, probably into the 15s and 20s.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wayne had nothing but Crave, which is effectively what we felt was the evil guy version.
Basically,
he was doing really well at gaining Crave.
Yeah. I had a very, very trigger-happy axe.
So there was a significant difference in the scores that some of the factions had between Prestige and Crave,
It was definitely,
and we didn't know what we were expecting going to the final game, and we felt that ultimately there would probably be some sort of event that says, okay, whoever has the most Crave wins, or whoever has the most Prestige wins.
Yeah, that's what we thought.
And then you go into the game, and you open up like three envelopes or something, and it goes, hand all these cards out to everyone, because now we're going to work out who's winning, or who has the most and least Prestige and Crave. Doesn't matter what they are, add them all together.
So it all became the same thing.
Because ultimately it didn't matter, it represented your power.
Yeah.
Your house's standing, whether good or bad, right?
Yeah. The fact we opened up, there was, I think, 8 double-sided cards of here's how the final session.
Here's a bunch here's of how extra the
final,
rules.
Yeah, like, here's how the final event, like the little mini-game worked. Because there'd been a couple of mini-games throughout the game which were like, oh, this is a neat slight change to what we're usually doing about voting. And then you open up this one, it's like, oh boy, rules card number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Let's read these 4 or 5 times.
And Kevin, you were feeling pretty confident going into the last game, I think.
So even after totting it all up, the lowest person had a total of 53. The highest had a total of 60.
Yeah, it was close.
It was close. I had the highest.
Yeah.
Nick had the lowest.
It was a swing
more
of
on that later.
More to come on that.
And then essentially, everyone was presented with a story development.
Yeah.
In this case, we're in spoiler territory, right? Yeah. So basically, there were other factions behind the scenes, right, conspiring to bring the kingdom down, and we were ultimately choosing as to whether to side with them or try to side with the kingdom.
Yeah. Mm. It was a revolution.
To try and prevent this revolution from happening.
Yes.
This revolution that was behind a series of rises and falls of kingdoms that had been this mystery background that had happened
in the past.
Before.
Yeah,
actually, in classic King's Dilemma way, wasn't there side one way or the other or abstain?
You could abstain.
Yeah, you could abstain.
And essentially, we basically got to pick between us a number of options. There would be a series of sort of events that would be resolved in a certain order: a battle at the gates of the castle, stealing the royal treasure, deploying the house's armies, motivating the people, sending messengers for help, or assassinations.
Yes, full-on killing.
And everyone would get to pick to do two things.
Mm.
That's it.
You'd be presented with a load of options, and you could pick two things out of all of these things. And each of these options, these 5 sort of key events, you would be deciding whether you're sort of helping or hindering them one way or the other, right? So we had, for example, with the assassinations, you had the option to try and assassinate or protect the High Commander, the Royal Treasurer, or the Librarian Chancellor. And depending on how we voted, it determined how these events resolved. And then we added a load of bonus. I think it was dissolution and... What were the two traits?
Oh, I do not remember the term that they called them, because it's really normal.
Cohesion?
A sword or a spiky sword?
It was a sword.
Swords and spiky swords.
That's really annoying. I can't remember. Cohesion and dissent.
Okay.
That's it.
We basically ended up with a score of cohesion and dissent based on how we resolved the 6 main storylines and how we had conspired in the final five events, right? Ultimately determining whether Cohesion or Dissent won and the kingdom survived or fell into chaos.
Yeah.
And even here we're directly vying against each other because you may choose to assassinate someone, I may choose to protect you.
Yeah.
So our two of our two choices that we each get, we just cancel each other out. Yeah. So we have no impact at all.
But it's all done secretly.
Or you could rob the treasury.
Or you want the treasury.
You could just rob the treasury.
Someone might have done.
And you, essentially, you're just given a tick card and you just tick the options that you want in secret.
But I think we spent about 35, 40 minutes.
It was
conspiring, arranging two and three person meetings to conspire about which options we were going to
take. The game actively, encourages you to go full on, negotiate, diplomacy, take people aside. Talk about it and really think about it.
We did it.
Yeah, I think I was the only person who wasn't invited to any meetings. No. So every time anyone left the room, I just conspired with whoever was left.
Oh, yeah.
It was quite a distinct break in the gameplay style, I think.
Yes, it almost became akin to what I'd expect from like a LARPing game, where you're not focusing on a board now. Now you're actually just taking people aside and going like, hey, let's wander around this back room. It really hit that, like, the entire time when I was playing this game, I was telling other people what I was playing. It's like, this is what, like, the Game of Thrones game people expect it to be, where it's a bunch of people backstabbing each other and making a kingdom fall to the ground where they line their own pockets. Yeah. And that ending bit where you were taking people aside, it's like the stupid meme of like taking someone around the garden and talking about how they're going to kill each other. I think the very first thing was like me and Karen, was it us two who went first?
I was in the first two conversations.
I remember just taking out Karen and going, what are you doing, Karen? And we'll sit in there thinking, well, we can do this, we can do that, figuring out how we're going to win. I was sitting there, because obviously, I was in last place. I was sitting there. All I'm doing is I'm helping someone else win at this point, which I completely came at peace with. Like, I'm in last place. I'm not going to win this game. I'm just going to help one side win and I'm going to feel good. I'm going to try and be on the winning side and have that for me.
More on that later.
Yeah. And then so I was taking Karen out, taking her aside, just having a little chat, what's going on. And then when Karen and Simon left and got to chat with Wayne and Tom about what they got, it was so good, just that thematic peak there of discussing this game, having to leave the room so other people don't hear you and you can talk a lot about it was perfect. Loved it.
I continued my streak of never manipulating anybody. Never lying to anybody.
Brutally honest the whole time.
I think certain members of the council are far better in their politicking than others.
Yeah.
And it perhaps didn't suit me too well.
Very, very impactful and memorable part of the whole campaign.
Yes.
And not a single component was being used.
Exactly.
And we were definitely playing the game. Set up. We were playing it and we weren't using a single component.
I guess I can see why people might have fallen out with this, because it suddenly changed the whole pace of the game. Mm-hmm. And people who might have felt that they were in the lead suddenly weren't in the lead. Everyone was back in the mix again. Anyone could win.
Yep.
And suddenly you do away with 90% of the components of the game and you're basically just discussing over a couple of tick boxes.
Well, I tell you what I really, really liked is that it kind of led you down the garden path in some way of thinking, well, one is better than the other, or prestige is better than crave, or if you've got the most of one, you've got the most.
Yes.
But the lesson it teaches you is that it's all power in the end.
Yep. Yes.
Right? Yes. It doesn't matter. You are influencing in some way and this will have an impact.
Yeah.
And I thought that was fascinating.
Mm.
So going back to something I said right at the beginning of the cast about the components, about falling in love or learning to respect them. Yeah. Throughout the whole game, you are using three cards, your I card, your nay card, and your abstain or pass card. Right at the end of this game, we are choosing one of those cards that is sat in front of us for the whole game, and we're signing our name to it secretly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So you're either choosing to be part of the revolution or to help the kingdom or to step aside. And that was so powerful. And Nick still got the cards sat in front of us. And we've all signed them beautifully, by the way.
Yeah.
Smiley face. Yeah, I do.
Smiley face for revolution.
Yeah, I do know.
Signed in blood, is that way?
If the Never card that you signed, I or nay, turned out not to be on the winning side, you were completely out of it.
Yeah,
you just couldn't win.
If you abstained, you were still in it. You just wouldn't have as much influence.
Yeah.
So there was the risk there.
I assume that if you had the game with the runaway victor, because a lot of this stuff revealed, and we could, if you assume you knew what other people were voting at, you could see where the points were going. So yeah, if there was one person that had won like 75% of the games and had such a difference in score, I could see them going, oh, I can just do it by myself, pass, and I'll win no matter what. I could see that's where it would fall off for some people. But as I was saying, I didn't see anywhere online people saying it in such a positive way, like the experience we had.
Yeah, we had a really positive experience.
I think this was literally the biggest cherry on top of this game of how it all ended, that I don't see how it was so bad for people that they were saying they were disappointed by it.
Yeah.
So I agree with you, Nick, and I was winning. I was set to win.
You were in, yeah.
There was only one way that it could turn out. If everything went to shit, right?
Yeah.
If it turned a particular way, and there was someone who was sat at the table and never went out for any of these discussions, who'd figured all of that out,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Who
knew that they couldn't win, but could help decide.
And even after all of that, okay, I didn't win. But, oh my God, was it such a beautiful ending to the game. Oh, and I don't resent it in any way whatsoever. No,
it almost felt right.
It feels, I mean, I know that you and I were mostly aligned in our politicking, if you will, Karen. Yeah. And I think we agreed after probably no more than 3 or 4 games that, and I think the other guys were doing it as well, although it did almost fall into comic territory, the warmongering desires. But, you know, from a role-play perspective, it very much, we were like, well, we have to set aside what we feel like is the known game mechanic, although there's still that area of mystery as to exactly how it's going to work. But set that aside and go, well, I wouldn't at this point, having made all of the 15 games worth of choices and all that voting and all that coin spent, suddenly go, oh yeah, but it's probably going to happen this way, so I'll go with it so I can win the game.
Yep. Yes.
It felt more important to make what you felt was your house's decision.
Yeah, right.
You need to roleplay a little bit. You need to read that blurb at the back of your book and go, oh, it says my people are greedy. Brilliant. I'm going to make sure I get gold. Or at least try to.
And a point on this, I don't think that final thing took away from the rest of the game. If you've enjoyed the whole game, treat this as a bonus game at the end.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
it was, yeah, like, man, obviously, to let the spoilers go, I became the king. I won. Which I was going into it.
You went from last to going becoming king.
I think about game 10, I think about game 8 or 9, I was like, I am not winning this at all. And when the final event came out, it's like, I'm not winning this. It's like, oh, that's fine. I'm still having fun. I'm going to try and help and be on the winning side. I might as well. And then going through and, like, talking with Kerin, talking about, okay, well, you're in a good position to win. You and Simon seem to be on the kingdom side, whatnot. Talking to Kerin, going, okay, I'm going to do whatever I can do to maximise my points in the game. I'm not going to win, but And then walking in, having Kerin and Simon go off, and then having Tom and Wayne turn and go, we're going to fuck up this kingdom. And I was like,
We've worked out we can burn
and
this place
to
the ground.
And then I sat there, and I looked at the points, and there's this minute of like, oh shit, if Tom literally does just scupper the kingdom, which I think is his plan, I can win this. And I imagine sitting there, and my anxiety and adrenaline was going absolutely insane. I was sitting there going, oh, please no one notice I'm being really quiet right now, trying to figure out these points. And then I was like, man, if I pick these two options, which if it doesn't go my way, I middlingly lose and either Tom or Wayne wins. But if this,
I think that is where people are not enjoying this, because if you have either the right or wrong mindset, depending.
Yeah.
See, I don't think I would math out as you guys do. Yeah. Whether you choose to, like whether you actively set out to work it out or whether it's just the way your brains work.
Mm.
I know that both Nick and Tom are very good at mathing out.
I got to a certain point where I realised I couldn't win, so I could just help decide who did win.
Yeah. So whereas I don't choose to try and work it out mathematically, and B, I don't think I literally can. I can't iterate that quickly without making it very obvious. So I went more with this is what I would like to happen.
Yeah.
I can see where people would feel screwed if they were with a group of players that have that ability to math it out and chose to math it out purely for gaming rather than...
You don't need...
role-playing it, as it were.
You don't need to be really good at games to play this game and have it come through. I think maybe that's what it is. If you play the first like 2 or 3 games, you can go, this is a really, like, for people who don't, like, play board games and literally have a group of friends who play very simple things, this is like a game or two after you've played, like, a few board games. You could very easily do it and play it, get to the end, and I can see what you mean about it suddenly becoming a case of so many options that you can't figure out how to win.
Well, I think that's more on the play. You need to know what you're getting into. This isn't a Euro game where you win by having the best strategy and it being close at the end.
Yeah.
It's a story-driven experience that is incredibly player-dependent.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're not leaning into it, you're not going to enjoy it. And if you're expecting that your perfect strategic play will get you the victory, you're going to be disappointed because it's not that type of experience.
Yeah.
At the end of it, it's going to mix everything up and you need to lean into that and dig in and have some fun.
I really liked that it gave everyone an opportunity at the end of
this. Yeah, I
was worried going into the end of the game that it was all predefined.
Yeah, me too. And I was pleasantly surprised that I was in with a shout, and it was like the fact
that it mixed everything up, I really liked, because it made the last game super, super tense.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, the fact that there was a chance where we hit that card which said, okay, combine your prestige and your crave. I think a lot of us just went, oh, we've found regular, oh no, your score gets flattened and now it becomes a lot more closer.
Just power.
Yeah.
Okay. Right, well, I think we'll come out of spoiler and we'll crack on. So coming out of spoiler territory, we'll just quickly go to the complexity. How complex do you think this is, with 5 being the most complex game you've ever played, like Gaia Project, etc., Mage Knight, and 1 being your sort of very easy party game type thing? Where would you rate this in terms of complexity, chaps?
2.
2 for you, Tom? Okay.
2.
Yeah. About 2, yeah.
It's
Mechanics-wise, it is a 2. Like, understanding the game, easy peasy.
I would think that's probably the same for me. I'd say about 2.
Yeah, with that bit that if you skip the spoilery bit, wouldn't have just heard the complex ending potential.
Yeah.
Yeah, every round there's a dilemma. You choose whether you want to vote yes, no, or let someone else choose.
Yeah.
And deal with the consequences.
Deal with the consequences.
Enjoy the story.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll quickly... let's segue into the theme and gameplay interaction. And we're not going to spend too much on here because you would have got
our general
image about the theme. How well do you think the mechanisms interact with the theme?
Because it's all... voting, it's so evocative of a bunch of completely detached councilmen in a chamber.
Yeah. It really does. Over stuff.
Right.
Yep.
I feel like the
ebb and flow with the closed economy for power is
brilliant. Playing with power, playing with money, hoarding power, hoarding money.
Yeah.
I
almost feel like this is the other half of War of Whispers.
Whereas
that is a set procedure of these things are going to happen. You can choose. Kind of how this is an unknown series of happenings, and we almost choosing which way they go.
War of Whispers is a very, very deterministic Euro game, right?
Yeah,
with the same sort of theme, manipulating from behind the scenes, and this is basically all role playing,
all of the discussion that's going on.
Very much put on that skin of I'm the guy in the background who's really in charge.
It's another step back, because like you've obviously got the war game of like if War Whispers, you could go inside it. Like here's a war game of some of these 5 nations fighting. Take a step back. You've got the fortified. You've got the number of people running it. I think this is a step back from that even more, because you're losing. Like the look of the world, like there's no pieces moving. It literally all. What do you remember that happened from previous times? What is left on the table? It's sort of like the missing link between going out playing a mega game or a LARP game where you're just going to spend like 8 hours of let's pretend to be these people with very weird latched on rules. Obviously swapping over to like something like the Game of Thrones board game, which is very much a war game with slight, okay, let's help you, let's help me. It's sort of like that weird middle ground of it's got a licking of mechanical rules to how the game works, but then a lot of underlying how then actually a lot of cogs. But the main moving parts are, like I said, nay, that's it. But then obviously it's how those fit into how it goes on.
It's just enough dusting of mechanical robustness to allow the story to breathe.
Yeah, maybe not elegant in the best ways, but it's a very simplified system to then let you just yell it.
I think it quite organically instills the desire to follow an agenda, whether it be exactly the one that's written on your house card or otherwise.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it does bring that to the forefront beyond any underlying game mechanics.
Let's move to the final thoughts, and we'll go, I suppose, one by one. Tom, what did you like most about The King's Dilemma? And what was your favourite sort of general event, if you can recall one?
So for me, it was definitely the focus of sort of the political machinations, right?
Yeah.
Right. So much of the game is about manipulating how the events work and sort of reading between the lines, as I mentioned before, and sort of second guessing where the stories might go. To a certain extent, I didn't really necessarily care who won each event, but I always wanted a certain event to sort of resolve so that I could see the next sort of step in the story. And it's all the story. Favourite event? Mad King Labyrinth.
Yeah.
Leading to the king becoming self-aware and breaking the fourth wall.
Yeah.
And then subsequently having multiple instances of the king basically barging into the council chamber and demanding that we, the players... acknowledge that the king knows about us.
It's so good. It's
just brilliant.
That was great. Yeah.
Garen.
My favourite aspect of the game has got to be the players. The players made this game. I don't know if I would have enjoyed it with a different group of players as much as I did. I enjoyed listening to debates between players that I wasn't involved in. I enjoyed being involved in them.
I would love to experience this again with a different set of people and see how different it is.
And then to put our own narrative to the narrative that's already there. There's some storylines that came about, and we would add our own sort of what our house had to do with that. So the story was absolutely beautiful. To the extent that I enjoyed the story so much, this is my favourite loss of a game ever, which trumps some of my wins in games.
Yeah,
wow. I liked the loss so much.
Yeah.
That says something.
Because it meant something.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Nick?
Oh, man.
Favourite thing?
It does that legacy thing, which I have a like for legacy games where I'm just kind of so intrigued by the ongoing nature to them. Like, I've played campaign games before where you can play it, you can reset it, you just add cards to little decks, you go along. And I think it says something about the whole legacy where it's ongoing, you're evolving your own little play style, like your own little meta in the game as you're playing it. As Karen was saying, with the people you're playing, you're evolving little strategies between people, you're referencing things that happened previously. This does that in spades because
you're holding grudges from game to game. It remembers
what you're doing. And I think we were talking preemptively for the podcast about some legacy games which just seem to have built a game, take components out, and then sort of dig them out as you play through. This is just... there's nothing really hidden in this game. There were some mini games that popped up, but the main part of it was, here's the game, we're going to keep throwing story beats on you that you guys are going to react to. You, like Karen said, you're going to make that game. I think that's what it was, is that long, ongoing legacy aspect to it where we made it our own. Simon said as well, like with how this worked with different players, I don't think I'd want to play, I can't play this again with someone else because I know how it ends. I think the reveals of this game is what made me like it so much. I couldn't play this again. Obviously, Queen's Dilemma is coming out at some point, and that's very much something that I'm gonna force you guys to play again. If some of you go and Ari, I'm gonna say no. I'm gonna be slapped on the back of the head. Say we are playing. We did
remember
the first one.
Remember how much we enjoyed this,
and we'll do it again. But yeah, that's that ongoing narrative legacy, making the game your own. For the thing that I remember most from this game, it's the bloody joust. not my favourite, but definitely the thing that had the most impact I remember is just this bloody joust where I put all my
money
into this inner inoffensive, inconsequential joust, and Karen,
I remember that,
flips it around. I lost all my money.
I gained all your money.
You got so much money. And I think, yeah, that, like, again, that was so inconsequential.
Is that the precursor? Is that why the ending happened?
And then seeing that second joust and just feeling so much despair.
That's so good.
That, nothing impactful, just a one-off thing that happened in a game. That's what I remember as my favourite part.
So good.
Not going into that glass tower or what it was.
Burning the library down because I was like, I'm going to go in here, and then coming out with the one book that we all enjoyed that book though, didn't we?
Oh, the mad book.
The book that didn't burn. Yeah, that was great.
I love that. Yeah, so good. But no, Joust had the big emotional impact for me.
The thing I like the most about this game, and this is going to sound really weird out of context, But the dilemmas are so good, and the way that I like to embody my house was so like enthralling. I've never enjoyed advocating for the murdering of children so much.
Oh, yes!
innocent children? No. Nah.
It's funny how you can sway people.
Yeah, right, yeah. Can I put myself into the mindset where I can try and persuade people to my cause? Or just, you know, just casual executions of innocent folks that have done nothing wrong. Brilliant.
Or give children to a paedophile.
We had that event where we're just saying, can we be paedophiles? And we were saying this in the middle of a club going, guys, we can't be paedophiles. This is so wrong.
Let me top up your wine.
No, not being paedophiles.
Giving children do we want to advocate for this pedophile?
To clarify, when we said earlier that we added our own embellishments to the story, this is very much one of those embellishments.
Yes, yeah, the game did not.
There were some nefarious implications, but it was not at all specified. I think it's very much a magic-based use for the children rather than anything.
Yeah. Well, and also,
Trying
to encourage people, you know, just casual human sacrifice for wealth.
Oh, yeah.
Melting people down for gold.
That was probably one of my more memorable events, was that. Why not? What could possibly go wrong with blood magic?
Yeah.
Absolutely nothing.
Blood magic funded the next 10 games.
Yeah, just gave us loads of money. Nothing wrong with that at all. Yeah, so that was probably my favourite thing. The dilemmas and putting yourself in the shoes of your house to argue your way. It was just great fun.
Yeah, I mean, going last after you four guys really has covered most of it. As Nick said, it's not the kind of legacy game that ekes out mechanics game per game. You pretty much get everything up front.
Mm.
And then subtly adds these little events or sometimes ongoing things that will carry over game to game. So there was the war effort that we needed to, or could choose to not, add our influence to at each round. And sometimes we just didn't get a chance, and that war happened, and, you know, we dealt with the results. But you were always given these multiple options. It wasn't ever a clear cut, oh, this is definitely the best thing, this is definitely the worst thing, we should all definitely choose the best thing. There were some that felt like that, and as I said at the beginning, there were some that felt like that, and I stupidly assumed that everyone would therefore vote what I would consider correctly, much to my chagrin.
There were genuinely so many dilemmas in the game, right?
Yeah. It very rarely a clear cut. This will be the benefit, this will be the detriment. It was very much a case of this might help at a cost, or this will be something we can afford to lose. For my favourite event, you guys have mentioned some classics out there. I think possibly my favourite events would be the ones I never saw, because it felt like there's a bunch of stuff didn't go my way. That's fine. You know, I get to see a story, and I think that story was permanently affecting. Mm. It was really quite an investment into that kind of lore and background that you slowly found out about, but always with an element of doubt. So it was never a clear-cut choice. It always was that dilemma, and I think it was developed and put out there incredibly well.
Does anyone want to say anything about anything they didn't particularly like? Any criticisms?
It was very detailed in part. Possibly, you know, we've said that we had those six ongoing storylines, and although it wasn't crucial to remember every element and every aspect,
you kind of needed to remember some stuff.
You did need to know the general arc, and, you know, week to week, you could not play this game in any fashion other than over a number of weeks, I think. Even if you're playing it all day, every day, you know, that's a hell of a lot of info to remember.
There'd be stories that come up, and I'd be like, wait, what the fuck is this?
Yeah,
and then me just remind myself.
Yeah, we would occasionally have forgotten some key NPC, and we're like,
and if you were then having to make a decision based on
that,
whatever was happening with this person, like, okay, I do need a degree of refresher on that.
Hmm.
I don't know how else you would handle it, though, this kind of
depth of story and branching
lines.
Yeah, I think we've covered it already, but really the only downsides, I think, are a little bit of sort of complaint about the component and art direction. But that being said, that's not what the game is.
No.
So
I think it fits reasonably well.
This isn't a complaint of mine, but I know it's a complaint a lot of people who play this might have, and that's things aren't going to go your way, and some people don't like that. I think for all of us, so much didn't go our way.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And that can really irk you, right? If you're playing game after game and things just aren't... That's not how I wanted it to go. So this is going badly. This is going badly. It's a game that goes badly.
So I learned to enjoy it. For example, there's 10, 12 factions.
Yeah.
If you picked 5 of them that were all ostensibly good guys...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, like, 4 of the players were always agreeing, for example.
Mm-hmm. And
one person was Wayne. always.
Those 4 players were having a bad time.
Yeah. Or Tom.
Yeah. I feel like we always sort of had... I am going to simplify here, but basically Wayne and I were the bad guys.
Yeah, right? Essentially.
Simon and I were the good guys.
And Nick was greedy.
His usual element of chaos.
Yeah.
It was a perfect dynamic.
It was a very good dynamic, and that may have figured very heavily into how our game
it
went.
Might well have done, actually. Yeah.
But we don't know.
We don't know, but that's a good point to make.
Yeah.
I think that probably bleeds into who this game is or isn't for. We've kind of mentioned it already, but you need to be ready to lean into the story, lean into the role-playing a little bit.
Know that it's a very long-winded legacy.
Yeah, exactly. And let go of your notions of sort of your strategic play might get you the things you want.
Interestingly, this is probably one of the shorter legacy games.
Probably.
Yes, it can be. Mm. I think it definitely ended... I think this definitely ended where it should have. Maybe 1 or 2 games a bit... later than it should have.
I never had a game that felt unnecessary.
No, but yeah. I think it was, we figured out like 19 games or something was the most it could go
there
up.
There was
to.
A hard stop, yeah.
Yeah, like, and I think at that point,
path through the
if
story
this line. Had gone that far, I think we would have started to go like, why is this taking so long?
Yeah, it didn't
so
outstay its welcome either game or as a campaign.
I think it ended at a really good point.
Yeah.
It definitely felt like a good stopping point for where that game ended and the whole resolution.
I agree.
Yeah. 15 games, but remember that they're short games. Yes. So it was like 8 sessions.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
And I think even one of our sessions was we fit in 3 or something.
There was a 25-minute game because we either miraculously all agreed or the elements of story that came out just drove the end really quick.
Yeah.
And that's absolutely fine. I don't think we were disappointed.
No.
It wasn't like, oh, it finished too quick. It's like, play the next one.
Yeah.
Let's crack on.
Let's move to the conclusion. So your final words on the King's Dilemma and then your final rating. And I'll go the other way around because you've been last these times. So Simon...
Oh, no.
Now you've got to think. So your final thoughts and your final rating out of 5 for King's Dilemma.
I would happily give this either somewhere between a 3 and a 4 out of 5 for general overall game. I did really enjoy it. I think we all, as we've already said, came together as a group and thoroughly enjoyed every session. I haven't really got a vast amount of experience with legacy games. Seeing permanent stickers on the board, permanent writing on cards and so on, I had that element of...
traumatised.
Oh,
what is this? Yeah.
Not traumatised in and of itself, but I did feel somewhat apprehensive with the commitment, maybe. We're partway through a new legacy game now, and there's that part of me that thinks, I don't want to make permanent changes to this, and then be the guy that's like, sorry guys. Don't be scared of that. It really isn't a game that you need to worry about that kind of thing. Just dive into it. As Wayne said earlier, it's not a... points-based Euro game where you really need to like over-focus on it and plan turns ahead. It's very more an emotional game.
Mm.
And I think that is quite refreshing. Not to say there aren't other games out there, but I've never played anything like this, really. Mm. It has elements of other games, but nothing really like this.
Yeah, I think for the experience that I've had playing with you gentlemen over the 15 games, this is an easy 5 out of 5 for me. But that rating is going to be heavily tempered by the fact that this will be entirely group driven.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to have the right people who are prepared to go into this with the right mindset and enjoy it for what it is. And then you'll get an absolutely 10 out of 10, 5-star, great time. And you'll enjoy the time together and you'll have a blast role-playing your houses and talking through some of the ridiculous, often dark dilemmas creating your own story through it. And I think it does that in a really magical way. Very evocative, very emotional. You use that word there.
Yeah.
I think that's very good.
And very impactful and absolutely memorable, as you say, Karen, as well. So
yeah, it's not a game you necessarily approach casually, but
yes.
Also, it doesn't feel like a heavy game.
Yeah, don't take it too
in
serious.
Terms of the bearing weight of your decisions. It shouldn't feel like that, and I didn't feel like that. As much as I said that a lot of stuff I feel didn't go my way, it didn't stop my enjoyment of the game. It was very much a case of, well, this is on you guys. Let's see what you've done.
And I think, although some of the dilemmas are morally interesting and can be deep, I played my house with a very much a tongue-in-cheek attitude to all of it.
Yeah.
Which you kind of have to do, because you have to detach yourself from what is basically a horrible medieval environment. So, anyway, those are my final thoughts. 5 out of 5 for the experience, tempered by the fact that it's entirely group-dependent.
Same sort of game. Yeah, I think you've got it right there, Wayne, with the... It's this for me... As a series of 15 games played with the same friends, playing the same game, getting really into it, it has elevated this. This is literally like a 5 out of 5. I enjoyed every minute of playing this game when we got through it all the way to the end. And even like the half hour afterwards where we were chit-chatting before leaving, and then the days and whatnot, and then meeting up week afterwards going, oh, do you remember? Oh, you're still feeling that. I think back on this game and I have such fond memories that I think it's... taking the game away from the experience would be a disservice. So I can't separate the game as its mechanics. It's like, I could suddenly go, okay, ignoring all the fun I had this game, let's have a look at the mechanics of it. Let's point out the flaws. And I just can't at this point because I've had such a good time with it that it's melded that into one where this has stopped. This wasn't a game at that point. It was this event that I was playing with you guys. And that, I think, is where it's shown where, like I said, if you had a group of friends which that didn't happen with, it's just a case of let's go and play this game and everyone's playing to win and we're not doing the narrative, we're not doing like the silly little in jokes and having the nice time and just yelling at each other in full jest like an hour later we're not going to go, I don't want to play with you next week because you betrayed me there.
Yeah.
It's a case of, I want to play next week because you betrayed me. I want to see what happens with that. And it's just that perfect game, not perfect game, that perfect in that perfect event with you guys, which has made this such a fun thing. And I think I have you guys to say thank you for that, where you made this game as good as it could have been. Hope on the flip side that I didn't like, there's parts of this game where I came back and it's like, when we finished it and I won, and obviously I knocked Karen off of the potential. Exactly. I was coming out of there, and that's where the anxiety was coming from. Going,
Karen rapidly changing his mind.
That was me at the very last game going, do I win? Do I deserve to win? Is me winning going to make this a worse game for everybody else playing? And obviously it's come out, and thank God you all have enjoyed it.
Because if I won that
end game and you guys have gone, that was a shit ending, that would have made this such a bad... I would have had bad thoughts about this game afterwards. Yeah. But the fact that it was so fun, I won it and it didn't ruin the whole experience. I think that's where this game has just stuck itself in my head. It's something to remember.
Gary?
I'll try to be concise without being repetitive. My experience of the game, I will give 5 stars.
Mm-hmm.
The game in a vacuum doesn't necessarily deserve 5 stars.
Because, I agree, actually, yeah.
Because other experiences might not turn out that way. But all I can say is my experience, 5 stars.
Mm.
And it was all about the experience of the game and not necessarily just its mechanics, but the mechanics facilitated that experience.
They do just enough and get out of the way when they need to.
They do.
Tom?
So I when I was growing up, I read a lot of like pick your own adventure books. So this is like basically reading one of those books but with five players. Shouting at each other.
Turn to this page, no, turn to that page.
It's so dependent on the group, right? And I think we're lucky that we have a group for which this worked exceedingly well. This may, your mileage may vary, right?
Yes.
So I think take it with a pinch of salt, but absolutely 5 stars.
Mm.
Pinch of salt and a goblet of wine.
Which may or may not be poison.
A goblet of salt.
Don't let white Wayne pour it.
Good, and on that note, thanks for listening to Poor Stupid. Subscribe to us to get updates and to get future episodes of the show delivered directly to your ear holes via your favourite podcast service. You can find us all over the internet by looking for @BoardStupid, spelled B-O-A-R-D. And or you can find us on well, wherever you can find, on YouTube as well, actually, you can find all of our sort of media interviews and content. We're going to be at UK Games Expo this year, maybe at Essen, but definitely at UKG. We'll be doing some press, so that would be exciting. So follow us for lots of news from there. If you like our content, do us a massive favour, give us a 5-star review and share our content. But even better than that, just interact with us, leave us a comment and have a little chat. Have you played King's Dilemma? Were you faithful to the crown, or did you assist in the downfall of the kingdom? What fate befell the Ashers? Did you win the war in Enkhal? Has the king become self-aware at your location? Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you again real soon.
King's Council, I have one final proposition.
Yes?
Yeah?
Grounded bread and cheese with the finest slices of seasoned pork.
What aye, 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 aye! Aye. Yeah.